and welcome to episode 3 of season 9 of Over a Minute, the daily podcast, where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the Die Hard duo movies, Die Hard 4 and 5, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again for his third episode, finishing off his trilogy, is Jay Cluett of the Deep Blue Sea Pod. Welcome back to the
show. I'm here, Rob. Oh, sorry to interrupt. So I've just come back from the Bad Timing Awards.
Okay. So episode 3 begins with Farrell continuing along with his bluff and ends with Windows being blown out by the explosion. So
happened on his laptop as well, because he's probably using Windows. Multiple kinds of Windows are being exploded here.
Very nice.
Latest, sort of thing.
That is very true. We do have multiple layers of Windows. Well, this isn't 1995, so 2007. I'm assuming he was using it. Actually, he was probably using something a little more complicated than Windows. He's probably a Linux guy or something like that.
But if only we had Thomas Waits was one of the actors in this who played Windows in The Thing, and he'd blown up here with three kinds of Windows.
There you go.
Possibly more. I had to look up what his name was because I didn't know.
Okay.
Anyway, what happens in this chapter? Where are we? What's going on?
Where are we? We are right now yesterday we ended things with John interrupting Daisy Duke. Farrell's trying to bluff things off and saying that he is Daisy Duke. And John doesn't buy it. What Farrell said, he started saying yesterday, was, "Get a lot of shit for it when I was a kid. Please don't add to it. Can I see some identification, please?" John goes, "Yeah, sure." He takes out his badge and he goes, "Detective, yeah. That looks real. You get that at Toys R Us? Looks great." Now, do they have Toys R Us in England, Jay?
You do. It was only very recently I found out they had it in America. So yes, I assumed it was Jeffrey the Giraffe was a UK only mascot, but nope, turns out other countries too.
Yes, that is very true. So do you have any idea what year Toys R Us was incorporated?
I would guess the 80s.
1948.
I would be wrong.
Yeah, yes, you would be.
Okay, great.
Yes. So they it's a toy story that also sells clothing and baby products, and it first opened up in 1948 in Washington D.C. and then the headquarters are in New Jersey. So hey. I guess it sort of makes sense of why Farrell would use that as a, his suggestion as to where maybe he got it from. Who knows?
Maybe, yeah.
The store expanded and they had lots and lots of stores all around the world, and they ended up. Filing for bankruptcy.
Yes, I was aware of that. It's. Do you reckon there's any relation to then Bruce Willis, John McClane playing with the toys, the dolls in Matt Farrell's room that probably weren't bought from Toys R Us?
Probably not.
Okay.
Because I would think that some of the stuff that he buys there wouldn't be in Toys R Us, but you never know.
Oh, sure. I'm not saying, but the fact that he says Toys R Us, he thinks that John's badge is the toy, and then John comes in and plays with,
right.
He thinks that John's badge is a toy, which it's not, and then John thinks that Matt's collectibles are toys, which to Matt, they're not. So they're both accusing each other of having toys that aren't toys.
That's true.
They're the same person, the two sides of the coin.
That's a toy
not so
story.
Different, you and I.
That's right. It's such a toy story.
It is, yes.
And
the Terminator figure ends it all.
Yes. Yes. We shall get there. And you know, he's a little you know, Farrell really believes that someone's just putting him on here. And then after he goes, then of course, and then he sees that John has a gun, you know, in his shoulder holster. He goes, that actually looks pretty good. It makes you wonder that, you know, where would Farrell have seen a gun? And just looking at the way that the gun is, you know, clipped to John's shoulder holster, you know, oh, that must be real.
Yeah, it doesn't really hang together, does it? Yeah, I have no, I don't know how he would recognize the gun from that angle as being a proper gun and not just a plastic handle.
Exactly.
But, you know.
No clue.
Yeah.
No clue. you know, Farrell is a little taken aback by it because he's not really sure how he should be responding to this whole thing. And then, you know, looking through the door, he sees one of his neighbors. And, you know, again, remember this is like 3:30 in the morning already. And one of the neighbors goes, hey, Farrell, Sully PDL'd the new copy of the Killzone 9. Want to check it out? He goes, no thanks, though, man. And good luck at the Bad Timing Awards. So, do you have any idea what PDL stands for?
I'm guessing the DL is probably download. So the P, it's probably not a legal means of acquiring. I don't know what the P would be.
Right. Okay. So I did a search for what PDL could be, and I got five computer suggestions of what it could be. It could be page description language, Perl data language, program design language.
Doubt it.
Public documentation license.
Certainly not.
And progressive download.
Maybe that one.
So progressive download is the transfer of digital media files from a server to a client, typically using an HTTP protocol. It's the difference between streaming media and progressive download is how the digital media is received and stored by the end user device that is accessing the digital media. So basically my understanding of what this is that, you know, it's goes back to hacking. You know, they're illegally downloading a game here.
Acquiring. But they're saying it's the new Killzone?
Killzone 9.
Killzone 1 came out in 2004, and Killzone 2 came out in 2009. So there was an expansion pack, Liberation, that came out in 06, so that's probably what they're talking about here. I'm guessing. It's like a spin-off.
Maybe.
I played a demo of the original.
Oh, really?
Only briefly. I used to subscribe to PlayStation Magazine during the small time of my life when I had time to play video games, and 2004 happens to have fallen within that region. So I would have played a little bit of Killzone demo-wise. But I remember nothing at all from it. So this whole sidebar is irrelevant and unnecessary.
No, it's still fun to hear. You know, especially...
It's a shooty game. You shoot people. You shoot.
First-person shooter.
That's the one.
I used to love playing, and this was a long time ago, over probably 30 years ago, Duke Nukem. You know, that was always fun.
Sure, yeah.
I would, like, stay late at work, yeah, and a group of us would play, computer versus computer type of stuff. So.
Counter-Strike was... My friends played that game that I would kind of go around theirs and play it sometimes. I was very bad. Well, sorry, they were all very good.
Yeah, I was never good at these
things. And I was less good.
People used to get angry at me. I remember... this must have been at least 17 years ago. Someone invited me to like a gamer night where everyone had their laptops and they were playing in, you know, in the same apartment and stuff like that. And the people just kept getting really upset at me because my character kept dying, you know, in every one of them because I just was terrible at it. So, yeah.
That's what happens. You get some people, like I used to play Guitar Hero. I got quite good at Guitar Hero because I would just stay at home playing Guitar Hero, and then people wouldn't play it with me because I was better than them. Yeah, that's what happens.
Yeah. And then John looks at, you know, these guys walk away, and John looks at Farrell and goes, open the door. And he goes, oh, shit.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he opens the chain and lets John come in. And then Farrell goes, can I get you something? Coffee?
I like that Matt seems to think it's going well up until those guys show up and like, hey, Farrell. Like, no, John knows that you're the guy. And yes. They were lying. Like, damn it. I've been rumbled by my dingus neighbors. Like, no. You've been rumbled because you're a dumbass.
Yeah, exactly. And then, right. So he says, can I get you something? Coffee? A warrant? Now, from what I understand of American law, and I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know enough, but if you invite them into your house, then they don't need the warrant. You can say you can't come in, but that's my understanding. Again, I could be incorrect about that. But, you know, you if you voluntarily, like vampires, if you voluntarily let them in your house, then, you know, all bets are off, you know. At that.
Don't do it. Yeah. Exactly. The police are like vampires. It's long that's been
right. And then Farrell goes, what's this all about? And he goes, I don't know, some computer thing. DC feds want to talk to you. So let's go.
Feds. The disdain.
Yeah, the feds. Because I've been white hat for 4 years. But once you're on that goddamn list. So here we go back to what we were talking about the other day about black hats and white hats and all that stuff. And we, at this point, while they're having this conversation, we see that one of the assassins is putting his gun together, getting ready to shoot at them. And we get a nice shot of a whole bunch of different things that are in Farrell's workspace. You know, all the different action figures and the posters and, you know, his computer isn't on the floor. His computer is actually on the desk itself. We see, you know, the CPU is on the desk. We see he's got numerous monitors. He has at least three. You know, John's just looking around trying to figure out what's going on here. You know, looks into the room, possibly the bedroom, and you know, isn't really sure about what's there. But it's interesting. He's still willing to give all the information to Farrell as to who is really looking for him.
Yeah, well, he's not there to arrest this guy. He's there to like bring him in. Because the for like advice, not advice, but you know,
for questioning.
Questioning. He's not like, hey, Farrell, you're under arrest for hacking the government. He's like, the feds want to talk to you about something. You're on a list.
Correct.
So John's got no reason not to cooperate. He doesn't think Farrell is a suspect or anything. He's just going to
pick him up and then drive him 3 hours to DC. Yeah, that's
sure. And they're starting off well for a road trip.
Plane Trains and Automobiles Part 2. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And then Farrell goes, ah, such a pain in the ass. And then John picks up an action figure. Do you have any idea what this action figure is supposed to be?
I didn't recognize it. There's a bunch of others like dotted around. Like, he's got a Cyclops, he's got a Daredevil.
He's got a Wolverine.
This one, Stormtrooper.
Yeah, I can't figure out who it is.
But yeah, I didn't recognize what this could be. But then there's a lot of action figures out there that I don't recognize. So it could be. My guess is it's from some kind of game, probably. Like video game. Like that's the one.
And then John says, "You play with dolls?" And he goes, "Could you not touch that? Like a G.I. Joe? No, it's not. It's a limited edition."
Yeah. I love that he references G.I. Joe because he's in G.I. Joe. This is G.I. Joe. It's the original G.I. Joe.
Because it's a limited edition, and you know, again, if you have a limited edition, most people will keep it in a like either still in the box, or in some case, you know, you wouldn't just have it hanging around your apartment. Again, he's not expecting someone like John to come in,
like in the middle of the room,
or maybe Farrell is really really rich from all of the hacking that he's done. I mean, he just made $50,000 tonight, probably. But still, you know.
Yeah, it seems careless.
And it's even more careless the way that John actually plays with this
sure
with this limited edition action figure, and easily just pulls off one of his arms and goes, is that supposed to come off?
Yeah.
And Farrell.
Yeah. And then he goes and plays with, I recognize that. Oh, he then goes and plays. He plays with a Vision. I recognize the coloring of the next one he picks up. Yeah. Yeah. Vision from the MCU.
And, Farrell's response is great. He goes, no, but it's more valuable broken. Thanks for that.
Yeah, that's good.
And then John says, well, crazy glue. I'm sure it's very important. So do you know the official name of Crazy Glue?
Yes, it's the Craggle from the Lego movie is the official name of Crazy Glue.
The Craggle?
I believe.
No,
I don't. The Craggle is the whole is like the MacGuffin of the Lego movie. It's the Craggle, it's Crazy Glue. No, I don't. I am only familiar with Crazy Glue. It's not a brand that we have here, okay. I think.
No, but I'm not talking about the brand. I'm talking about the actual glue. Like, there's a name for
it. Oh, super glue.
No, it's the chemical name, I guess you can say, or the chemistry name. It's called the.
I do not know the chemistry name, the chemical compound for super glue.
Cyanocrylate.
Cyanocrylate. Okay, sure. That makes sense.
Which, again, is. Patented in 1947 by B.F. Goodrich Company. They were using it to for gun sights during the war effort, to glue them on so they would stay.
Cyanoacrylate, I think it is. Yeah, sure. We use that at work.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And then they stopped using it after a while because it didn't work very well. And then the Kodak Company in 1951 actually found it, and they realized that it could be used as an adhesive, and they decided to sell it under the title Eastman 910. And eventually people started realizing that they can use this as is referred to super glue, and they started using it as super glue, which is Crazy Glue is just one of the generic names of companies that made it. The problem with this type of adhesive is that it has a short shelf life, meaning once you open the container, the adhesive won't work for a very long time.
The thing that it sticks to the most is your fingers, more than anything else in the world.
Yeah. Right. It usually only lasts about 6 months after you open the thing, but they say that you should use it within 30 days just to be on the safe side. And whatever you do, don't put it in the refrigerator, and don't feed it after midnight. That causes, then you get more crazy.
Learn that the hard way.
Yeah, seriously. And then Farrell says to him, well, I got some other cool shit you can break. John is, this goes with the whole technology thing. That he's not up on these things. Which is why John McClane is the perfect cop to be dealing with this type of stuff.
Sure.
And then John says to him, yeah. And then John says to him, let's go, okay? Come on. He goes, I got to power down my gear, okay?
Yep, which takes a long time. Turn someone off.
Yeah. Of course. And then we get a shot of the assassin looking through his rifle scope, getting ready to shoot Farrell, searching for a target.
Yeah.
And then, John, as you said, John picks up Vision and starts playing with him and goes, more dolls? Spend a whole lot of time with the girls, are you?
Farrell makes a run for it. Truly.
And Farrell makes a run for it.
Ridiculous move.
Yeah. And John says to him, are you really trying to escape?
But I'd like that when the shooter shoots, Matt thinks that it's John shooting at him from inside the apartment.
That's
great. That's great. I'd not picked up on that before.
Yeah, he has no idea what direction those bullets are coming from. And the assassin starts shooting, and John goes, and Farrell screams out, Jesus, don't shoot. And John screams, get down. Jesus Christ. And then he says, stay right there. know, tons of you know, they're not being shy about how many bullets they're shooting into this apartment.
Empty.
You know, you'd think that at 3 o'clock in the morning, if someone in Camden is hearing this much shooting, they will get very, very scared.
Yes, that'll wake
and
the neighbors.
Probably call the police. Yes. the amount of bullets that fly into this apartment is just absurd.
It is quite a lot, and they haven't finished.
Yeah.
Still.
Yeah, and you think that this guy would be a sniper, but snipers take, you know, a few shots. They don't have to, you know, use the entire magazine every single time they're shooting.
Yeah. Jackson would have run out of bullets a long time ago in Saving Private Ryan, if that's the case.
Oh, long time ago. But Jackson would have taken this guy out through his eyes.
Sure, he would have taken out Farrell, McLean, and Vision all in one shot.
Yeah, probably. And then John is trying to keep Farrell safe, and he goes, you know, let's go. Come on, low, stay low.
So we're into the first action scene of the film. And we haven't really talked about Len Wiseman much as a director, which is probably good for Len Wiseman because he's not a good one. He leaves a lot. I haven't seen the Underworld films, so I can't critique those as much. But I think he's not a great director. He's great at marrying beautiful women, but he's bad at directing people. He's got 100% success rate marrying beautiful women. Well done to him. that's good. But yeah, I think as an action director, he leaves a lot to be desired. There is. It's the curse of a lot of modern action films. There's just too much cutting. There's just too much jumping around and editing and quick cuts. So much so that there's the shot where Bruce Willis kind of drags Justin Long along behind the back of the sofas. And that feels like a long take in this scene because it's 2 seconds, three maybe. And that feels like, oh, wow, they already gave that shot a room to breathe. Because it lasted more than a second, and everything else is just jump here, there, back, where we go, no, over there, and it's so easy to lose track of what is where and who is whom, and that just continues throughout this sequence. I think.
Yeah, it's very chaotic here.
That's a good word. On. Yeah, chaotic is good.
I would say that of the 9 seasons that I've done of this, this is the most chaotic action scene. That we've come across.
I don't know. There's some stuff in With Harry Met Sally that's pretty chaotic. The argument over the wagon wheel table gets shots all over the place.
That's true. But you know, we were able to. Carrie Fisher was able to handle that one really well.
It's a Wonderful Life is edited to death, all over the place. Where are those bells coming from? It could be anywhere. Yeah.
Well, they're shooting in It's a Wonderful Life. You know, they shoot out the sign that says Bedford Falls, that says Pottersville.
You always know where the shots are coming from.
That's right.
The sign of that's why Frank Capra's a better action director than Len Wiseman.
Okay, fair enough. So again, I'm not going to go through every single shot of the this battle between.
Oh, it would take forever. There's so many.
Yeah, exactly. But more or less, you know, we see that the assassins, the other assassins, realize that they need to go help. So they start you know, moving in to go help also.
Yeah, very. And John quick. Keeps, they get upstairs quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, and John reassures Farrell that you know, he's going to keep him safe, and. Then Farrell goes, but they're going to wake up the neighbors.
I mean, that's not his concern, given how loud his music has been. Correct. This guy does not care about his neighbors, and also they're already awake playing Killzone.
Yeah, well, because they're playing video games.
Yeah.
And then John tries to figure out how they're going to get out of the apartment, and he looks around. And I gotta say, I love the shot here, because the camera shot, you know, shows John's perspective as he's looking down the hallway. You know, you see, like, he sees where the fire alarm is, he sees where the elevator is, he sees the stairs. You know, it's done very, very well from that perspective. And John is trying to figure out, like, what's what's the best plan of how he's going to be able to do this. And he's not really sure. And then they decide that they're going to go towards the elevator. I don't know why. You know, don't they always tell you that in an emergency, don't use the elevator?
Well, he's probably thinking that the guys are coming up the stairs. So if they can get to the elevator before the guys got the stairs, they might have a chance to get out.
Yeah, but how does he know that there isn't a guy waiting down waiting downstairs?
Better to take the one guy waiting at the elevator than the two coming up the stairs? Isn't that the expression?
Yeah, more or less.
A guy, one in the foyer is worth two on the stairs.
That's true. And then John sees the fire extinguisher and grabs it, throws it down the hallway as he sees the guys showing up, and then shoots at it. And I got to say, it's a great shot because one of the guys just flies through the window.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it is. And he falls down, and hits the, he lands on a car down at the bottom.
Yep.
And, you know, basically, John's smiling. He's happy.
And then he says, I was going to wake the neighbors. It's all anyone cares about.
Right. Exactly. And then John decides that they have to get back in the apartment. So because the other guys are still coming. Now, John also does a great move here. He lies on his back and is able to keep the door closed.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have the guys in the hallway with machine guns, and we still have the sniper on the other side trying to catch them also, looking for something. And I love how Farrell goes to try and lock the door again, and John gets really upset at him.
So much faith in the latch.
That's right. He goes, "Are you nuts? Get out of there right now." He goes, "I'm trying to now."
Why use a latch thingy when you can use a fridge?
That's true. Teach you anything. And then John, thankfully, the kitchen is right next to the front door.
Yeah, it's a small
one. You know, John is able to take the fridge and tumble it over. And it's a good thing John has lots and lots and lots of magazines on him, because I'm sure that any cop who's just doing a regular beat is going to have five or six clips on them.
Well, this is John McClane. He knows that any random day can turn into Die Hard or Die Hard 2 or Die Hard 3. So he's going to be packing constantly.
That's true.
In Die Hard 2, he's just going to pick up Holly from the airport. In Die Hard 1, he's going to visit her at the Christmas party. Even when if he's on duty, especially, he's going to be packing.
Fair enough. Fair enough. And so these guys just keep shooting into the apartment, hitting the fridge, hitting everything. You know, they even make a hole in the wall from the amount of shooting that they're doing there, and put the gun into the room. And John is trying to find a way to get to his gun, and he can't get there. So he climbs on top of the fridge and stupidly uses his foot to deflect bullets from being shot. And then he punches his hand through the wall.
He punches the guy through the wall.
Punches the guy, grabs his head, and drags his head back into the room. And then John's able to quickly get back to his own gun before the next guy, continues shooting. And then John ends up getting into the room with Farrell, and they're hiding behind a bookcase maybe, and these assassins don't care. They're shooting everything, which again, there's no subtlety in what these guys are trying to do here. You'd think that if they were smart enough, they would find a way to just have a sniper kill each one of these guys with one shot or whatever it is. Instead of all the explosions, instead of them, running into an apartment building and just spraying it with as many bullets as possible.
Find the laptop and trigger it to hit the delete key once they've run away. That's something right. Like that.
That's right. And one of the guys manages to get into the room, climb over the fridge, and then John shoots him. He falls down. We see him screaming in pain. Thankfully, Like any good diehard villain, he's not going to die right away. He's going to still need a little more time for that. And John and him shoot back at one another while the guy's in the kitchen and John's in I guess the bedroom or whatever. And John, again, just keeps changing his clips one after the other. A lot of bullets. Randomly shoots at the guy. And the guy knows to hide. And during the random shots, John ends up hitting the Terminator action figure that's sitting on the shelf, you know, without John knowing it.
Yeah.
And John once again has to change bullets, just like the bad guy. He also has to change clips, and he gets up getting ready to shoot at John. And John, you know, starts giving Farrell a little bit more instructions. He goes, "Get back in there, get ready to run." Little does John know what's going to be happening. And then the bad guy is getting closer and closer to the room. And then they give us the shot of the Terminator action figure that has toppled over and then rolls off of the shelf and lands directly, perfectly. You know, it couldn't have gotten better than that. Right on the delete button.
And this film is all about technology and how everything can be controlled by the robot overlords. So it's only fitting that it's the Terminator action figure that is the one that hits the delete key.
And that makes sense.
Yeah.
I give them credit for that one.
Sure.
That works. And then there is a huge, huge, huge explosion. First of all, the bad guy goes flying, and he hits the wall right by John. You know, the wall behind which John and Farrell are hiding behind. And then we get an outside shot where this is just a huge explosion, and there's things flying out of the windows and everything like that.
I wouldn't describe it as huge. I would describe it as, I actually think this explosion is quite small compared to the one that blew up the house of the hacker on Monday.
Well, again, maybe they need, you know, they put the amount of plastique that they knew was needed for this type of apartment, or, you know, they wouldn't necessarily put the same amount in an apartment that they would put in a house, if the idea is to kill, you know, as many as possible or as be effective as possible.
That's fair. Yeah, maybe they're trying to be like, think of the neighbors. Don't want to wake up all those neighbors. Got to do a smaller explosion in this one.
Yeah.
Humane assassins.
Yeah, more or less. And that's all I have to say about this minute. Did you have anything else you wanted to add to it?
Not for this. No, we're all good. I think we covered everything I wanted to cover. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Okay, so the third is actually a game.
A game. I love a game.
Yes. It's a game called 6 Degrees of Bruce Willis.
Okay. You know,
what a better name for a game than something like this. So it works the same way as the 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon. The idea is that I'm going to give you the name of another actor or actress, and you have to try to connect them as concisely as possible with Bruce Willis. Okay, it doesn't matter if you start from Bruce Willis or the other actor. You know, that's your choice which direction you want to go.
Sure.
Okay. Okay, so the first one I'm going to give you, we're going to go back to season one of my podcast.
Okay.
How would you connect Steve McQueen to Bruce Willis?
Oh, I should have seen this coming. That is an interesting one. How would I connect Steve McQueen to Bruce Willis? They haven't worked together.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you that I am never going. The plan is not to use any actors who have worked directly with Bruce Willis, which
that's going to be tricky. He's worked with a lot of people,
which makes it that Samuel L. Jackson, you know, you can't use him.
Sure.
And,
oh yeah, they've worked together once or twice.
Reginald Val Johnson, you can't use either, and Bonnie Bedelia.
Okay, this probably isn't going to be the most direct route, but I'm going to say Steve McQueen is with James Coburn in The Great Escape.
Wonderful. Okay.
James Coburn worked with Steve Buscemi in Monsters, Inc. Steve Buscemi, Bruce Willis, Pulp Fiction.
Okay, you were so close to getting it even one level less.
I'm just trying to think. Oh, James Coburn worked with Bruce Willis.
James Coburn has been in a movie with Bruce Willis.
Okay, it's probably one. I've got a bunch of holes in my Willis filmography. So it could be like Tears of the Sun or something like that I haven't seen.
No. It's a movie from 1991.
1991?
Yes.
Bruce, I don't know what that is. Bonfire of the Vanities? I'm trying to think of early 90s Bruce Willis films. I don't think I've seen many of those. I might try. Can I go a different route? Charles Bronson? Robert Vaughn? I'm trying to think of like older actors who still worked. I need that crossover. Because like Steve McQueen checked out early. Stephen Queen ever worked with Charlton Heston, did he? That would have been fine, because he obviously did the narration for Armageddon. And Morgan Freeman's too late. Steve McQueen. What film was... Who worked with Steve McQueen? Love Steve McQueen. So many... I can't think of getting there any quicker than that. Paul Newman? Did Paul Newman ever work with Bruce Willis? Bruce Willis didn't do a voice in Cars. That's a shame. Did Steve McQueen ever work with Shatner? I don't think so. Steve McQueen and William Shatner in the same film is a film I would love to see. No, I don't think I can get any better than I did.
Okay,
without doing some Googling.
You can do it multiple ways with the magic number of two, right? So Steve McQueen to James Coburn. James Coburn was in Hudson Hawk with Bruce Willis.
I would never have remembered that.
Okay. Another way that I found was Steve McQueen and Paul Newman were in The Towering Inferno together.
Sure. And also Somebody Up There Likes Me. They're both in that too.
Okay. And Paul Newman and Bruce Willis were in the movie Nobody's Fool, which is a movie I adore. It's a great movie.
Oh, okay. A film I don't know.
Right. Okay. Those are the two that I found. Okay.
I'm happy with three.
Okay. I'm happy with three. All right. Your next choice is Meg Ryan. How would you connect Meg Ryan?
That sound was not against Meg Ryan. That sound was against me having seen very few Meg Ryan films. So When Harry Met Sally, you've got Bruno Kirby. I mean, you can go down the Meg Ryan, Billy Crystal, When Harry Met Sally, Billy Crystal to Steve Buscemi in Monsters, Inc., Steve Buscemi to Bruce Willis in, let's say, Armageddon this time. So we've got a three on the table. Can we do better than three? So Meg Ryan films. She's obviously worked with Tom Hanks a bunch. Tom Hanks has never worked with Bruce Willis that I'm aware of. Meg Ryan was in The Women? Was Meg Ryan in The Women?
I believe she was, yes.
Okay. I haven't seen The Women, but I'm going to guess that Bruce Willis may have worked with one of those other women in The Women. But which woman from The Women has Bruce Willis worked with? It would help if I knew any of the other cast members from The Women. Has either of these worked with Deborah Messing? What else has Meg Ryan been in? See, so Dave Chappelle... Is Dave Chappelle going to be a good route? I don't think so. Greg Kinnear? Has he worked with Greg Kinnear? Somebody worked with Greg Kinnear, but I don't know what it meant. Why'd you pick Meg Ryan for me? I don't watch Meg Ryan films. Can you just... No, that's cheating to ask you to list things. What's the film that she's in with Russell Crowe that Roger Wistar loves, that no one else in the world loves? But then that's not going to help me because Russell Crowe hasn't worked with Bruce Willis that I know of. I think I'm going to be stuck at three again.
Okay. Yeah. So the one that I found was... I found two. That also, they're both two connections. You have Meg Ryan was in Joe versus the Volcano with Amanda Plummer.
In I'm thinking of Amanda Peet. Different person.
Okay, and Amanda Plummer was in
Pulp Fiction
with Bruce Willis. Another one is Meg Ryan was in Sleepless in Seattle with Rob Reiner, who was in The Story of Us with Bruce Willis.
I haven't seen that.
Okay.
I'm just looking up the cast of The Women now. Annette Bening, Eva Mendes. This is no Jada Pinkett Smith, Carrie Fisher again. No, this wouldn't have helped. Okay.
All right. The next one for you to choose is LL Cool J.
LL Cool J. Okay, so we have a two immediately. LL Cool J to Sam Jackson in Deep Blue Sea. Sam Jackson to Bruce Willis in half of Bruce Willis' films.
Perfect.
Yeah, I don't think that they've ever worked together. Was LL Cool J an alpha dog, maybe? Yeah, I doubt it.
I told you, there's no instance where they work together.
That you know of. There might be something that you've missed, Rob. You're not all-powerful. You're not all-knowing. You don't know. Okay. Bruce Willis has been in so many films with, like, ensemble films.
Okay, but I checked it out.
Okay.
I do my
I do my
research here.
I just know that, like, The Player is a film that Bruce Willis plays himself in, as do a bunch of people.
Yeah.
So I feel like that could be something there.
Correct. Another one that I got was so LL Cool J was in Deep Blue Sea with Michael Rapaport. Okay. And Michael Rapaport was in Bruce Willis called The Assassination of a High School President.
I would never have got that. I was trying to think, like, is Bruce Willis in True Romance? No. I don't think so.
I actually just watched that the other day. Such a great movie.
Is he in Copland? No. Not in Copland.
No. Okay. All right. Let's move on to the next one. But you did really well with LL Cool J and Sam Jackson. There you go.
Right. Thanks.
Okay. The next one is Jimmy Stewart.
Oh, hell. Do you not remember when he's like, what are your top five Jimmy Stewart films? Like, well, I got three. Okay, Jimmy Stewart. Okay, Airport 77, I think it's going to be the way to go here. James Stewart's in Airport 77. He shouldn't be. James Stewart should never be in a film with a helicopter in it, which didn't exist at the same time. Christopher Lee is in that film. Sir Christopher Lee, who was in The Lord of the Rings with Cate Blanchett, who was in, is it Bandit? No, Assassins or Bandits? One of those two. I can't remember the name of the film, but she's in it with Bruce Willis, I think.
Okay. But again, you can still do it with two.
No, someone could. I'm not saying I could. Okay. So Jimmy Stewart, is it a film? Are you using a film that a Jimmy Stewart film that I've probably seen?
Yes.
Okay, great. With an actor that I'm aware of. Because if you're gonna, oh yeah, there, Doris Day from The Man Who Knew Too Much. I don't know any of the Doris Day films. I don't know who was in Pillow Talk. if that's even her.
You can use an actor that you were thinking of using with Steve McQueen.
James Coburn?
No.
I don't remember what I said 3 minutes ago. Paul Newman?
No, keep going with the older actors now.
Robert Vaughn?
You didn't say Robert Vaughn.
I did say Robert Vaughn. Charles Bronson?
No.
That's the ones I said.
Charlton Heston.
Okay, but I don't know what Jim Stewart and Charlton Heston have been in together. I don't know many Charlton
it,
Heston.
It
films.
Won Best Picture, and it was also one of Steven Spielberg's favorite films from when he was a kid.
Jimmy Stewart in Ben Hur?
No, and it is rumored that it was Steven Spielberg's very first movie that he ever saw in the theater.
The Greatest Show on Earth. I haven't seen that.
Okay.
But fine, Jimmy. I didn't know Jimmy Stewart was in that.
I didn't know
Charlton Heston was in that. It feels like cheating to take this point, but fine. Jimmy Stewart, Charlton Heston, Greatest Show on Earth, Charlton Heston, Bruce Willis, Armageddon.
So another one that I found was Jimmy Stewart was in Fievel Goes West with John Lovett.
I know he's in that one, but I hadn't seen it, so I couldn't think of who else was going to be.
And John Lovett.
And then okay, so John Lovett. Leave me to John Lovett. John Lovett is in what's it called? The Loaded Weapon.
Very good with Bruce Willis.
Loaded Weapon. Yes. Because he plays the Joe Pesci role. Bruce Willis plays John McClane in a cameo.
Exactly. All right. And the final one that I will give you is Sam Neill.
Familiar with this guy?
Right.
I mean, the obvious thing is Sam Neill, Sam Jackson, Jurassic Park, Sam Jackson, Bruce Willis in everything.
There you go.
But is there another way? No, let's leave it
there. There is another way. I got to tell you, I forgot about the Sam Jackson one, which should have you know, taken out any options of me using someone in
Jurassic Park. Okay, let's see. Another way could be so Sam Neill is also in Event Horizon with. Lawrence Fishburne in Event Horizon? I've only seen that film once. Mark loves it. He's in In the Mouth of Madness with Jürgen Prochnow. He's probably in a film with Bruce Willis, but I don't know what it is. I'm not gonna drag this out any longer. I'm gonna stick with what I've got going through Jurassic Park.
Okay. Sam Neill was in The Hunt for Red October with Anthony Peck.
Yeah.
You remember who Anthony Peck is?
Don't remember who Anthony Peck is, because I've blocked that film out because I'm not a fan.
No, but Anthony Peck was in both Die Hard and Die Hard.
Oh, he's in the Die Hards. He's in 1 and 3.
That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's, do you remember who he is in Hunt for October? Like, no, I don't.
Okay. Correct. Okay.
I also forget that Sam Neill's in that one. He wants to see Montana.
Thank you. Exactly. Thank you for being a good sport about that one, Jay.
Yeah, I'm always happy to test out new games. That was fun.
Okay, and the final game that we will play with you is once again.
Oh, sure. I forgot again.
Your motto. You're going to have to decide about the motto of Guam.
Okay.
Guam is a U.S. territory.
Sure, I'm aware. I just wasn't expecting you to say the word Guam.
Oh, okay.
I was expecting, like, Arizona. And
so the choices are Justice for All, Where America's Day Begins, and The Life of the Land is Perpetuated in Righteousness.
Can you tell me geographically where Guam is?
It's like near the Philippines.
So is it this side of the dateline or the other side?
The other side.
So, okay. So in which case, I'm going to go with Where America's Day Begins, because that's going to be like where the start of the day is. And you're saying these are all taglines, mottos of something. So I'm guessing that's the most eastern of the territories.
And you would be correct.
Hooray, 3 for 3.
Exactly.
I actually worked that one out. The other two were guesses.
Perfect. All right. So, Jay, would you like to once again tell people where they can find you?
Sure. I mentioned Deep Blue Sea, the podcast, earlier this week. Mark Hoffmeyer and I also did Con Air, the podcast. That's finished. It's been finished for a few years now. But we did Con Air scene by scene. Rob joined us for a chapter. We talked about some other Con Air adjacent films as well. But you can go and listen to the entirety. Someone recently just downloaded the entire run of our Con Air scene by scene episodes. So good for them. So check that out. Con Air, the podcast, or Deep Blue Sea, the podcast, lifevsfilm.com. At Deep Blue Sea Pod is all of our social media handles. At JAYCLUIWT is where you can find me on Instagram, which is pretty much the only thing I use these days. For now, who knows how long that's going to last. But yeah, that's it. You'll find me back here in like 5 weeks.
Yeah.
Probably. Ish.
Yes, Jay.
And then again, the day after.
Jay will be back for episode 26, and then 27, 28, 29. And for the final episode at 47.
And then after that, for whatever the next project is.
Yes. which I don't know what that is yet. Right. So that's fine too. All right. Excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you feel like sending me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So, Jay, thank you very much for joining me once again and being my guinea pig.
Happy to be here.
All right. And until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.
Some folks are born made to wave the flag. Oh, they're red, white, and blue, yeah. But it ain't me. It ain't me. I ain't no fortunate one.